The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230 975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experience when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by NetWealth. Imagine a world where your clients have the best wealth technology at their fingers. With NetWealth's next-gen client portal and mobile app, clients can view and manage their portfolio, assets, and accounts wherever they are. By adding external bank and property feeds to their NetWealth account, they can get a true picture of their wealth. And by giving them the ability to transact and manage their cash, they can feel in control of their wealth. A world of client engagement awaits. Discover it at netwealth.com.au/woo.
To give listeners of the Advice Tech podcast another avenue to solve technology problems that matter most and efficiently evaluate the landscape of Advice Tech providers, Ensemble has launched an Advice Tech space on its platform. If you want to know how your advice peers are solving their tech challenges, big and small, it's the place to go. Head to the Ensemble platform or use the link in the show notes to join today.
Today's guest is someone who spent the better part of the last decade deep in the engine room of a fast-scaling advice business and has now stepped out to build something of his own. Daniel Donovan recently launched Alpine Advisory, where he's helping financial planning firms rethink how they operate, scale, and ultimately deliver a better client experience. Before that, he was at Verse for nearly 8 years, working across advice, ops, and systems, giving him a rare end-to-end view what actually makes a practice run efficiently. In this conversation, we unpack what's really happening inside growing advice firms, where hiring more people isn't always the answer, where operational bottlenecks tend to hide, and how practices can start thinking more strategically about scale. We also get into the practical side of things, what to automate, what not to automate, and why fixing the process matters more than just layering on new tech. So if you're a practice owner, COO, or COTO, or just someone who is trying to make your business run a little bit smoother, this one is packed with insights you can actually apply. And given Daniel is a returning guest, I started by asking him what the newest piece of tech he owns is.
The newest piece of tech that I bought is the Granola software app. It is a brilliant tool, lives on your computer. You can query any of your meetings across your entire database, and it works in all different apps too. So whether you have meetings in Teams or Slack or Google Meet, it's brilliant. You can chat to it like a complete note taker. It's brilliant.
I'm with you. It's different, isn't it? Because you're not having that awkward, a bot has joined whatever forum you're on, right? Like Teams or Zoom, etc.
And it's completely invisible.
It also supports, like, one of the things that I've found is particularly where you think about, defaulting to, say, the tool that you do your virtual meetings in, whether it's hitting record on Teams or Zoom, but that all falls down as soon as you have a hybrid or just an in-person meeting. So have you had any use cases for that, whipping out the app there, or is it not?
No, actually, I haven't tried the in-person app just yet, but have you tried it, Patrick?
I have. Same experience. I tried to do it on a phone call recently, and it couldn't do it. But I think, I think it's incredibly powerful, but also, like, do you feel that just we need to assume that every conversation we have is now recorded, because there's definitely the consent part of Granola as well?
I think you're getting to a point now where it makes too much sense to record all your conversations, because the benefits of being able to query it, getting the data out of your meetings, being more present in your meetings, outweighs the potential risk of you saying something you might not want to say. I think that's a relatively low risk, and compared to the other benefits, it's a massive win.
It is. And it's also like, it feels like that is the key, at least how I'm sort of seeing it, the key part of what the enterprise stack is going to be. Like, for example, we're recording this on the second day of April, and just yesterday
one of our sort of favorite tools, Slack, has come out with, I think they said it was about 30 different updates. I think I saw three of them. But one of them was basically a granola killer of doing the same thing. So it's just, it feels like that is a big part of getting context into your tools, which then obviously AI loves and lives and breathes it. So yeah, exciting times and definitely sort of a mindset shift. And then obviously that's a heavy sort of AI tool and I love it as well. Are there maybe one or two other ways that you're using AI, either personally or professionally, since we last caught up?
Since we last caught up, well, it was about, I think, 6 months ago that we, 6 to 8 months ago we caught up now, and it feels about 6 to 8 years in terms of how quickly AI has moved since then. I have spent the majority of my last 6 to 8 months with different AI tools, predominantly Claude, and seeing the shift over from ChatGPT and the power of Claude and all its different use cases, not just within the chat feature on the web, but the desktop app, Cowork, being able to use it on your computer. I'm sure you would have seen recently, and other listeners would have seen Microsoft announcing Microsoft Cowork Copilot, which is rolling out soon to some users already, but to most users by the end of the year. And yeah, across Claude Code too, the ability to code different apps or interfaces or dashboards, or, you know, I'm seeing some really interesting use cases with being able to represent financial concepts with clients, get recycling, make an interactive calculators, those sorts of things, all with natural language, is incredibly powerful within that Claude stack. So yeah, been spending a lot of time there.
Awesome. It is, yeah, as you mentioned, it's only been 6 months or so. I think it was, yeah, late September last year, episode 149. It's only, yeah, 166 now. So yeah, 17 episodes later, and the world feels and actually is totally different, as you mentioned. You join us in a different capacity now, Daniel. So you were at Verse for nearly 8 years, I believe. How did that role evolve over, you know, those many years over that time?
I started at Verse as a head of implementation or client experience manager, and that role gave me lots of great experience in the day-to-day operations of how to run the back-of-house side of things. And over time, very quickly, I found that that's where my natural skill set was, and I took on more and more of the operational responsibility of the business. I moved into the advisor space as well. So I split my time actually across being the head of operations and being an advisor. And I loved my time as an advisor, seeing clients, getting that real world firsthand experience, being in front of clients, doing the power planning, helping the power planning requests, doing the strategy documentation, helping out with the implementation side of things, getting that end-to-end experience. In my last few years, though, was predominantly around the operations side of the business, mostly in the systems and tech capacity, but also across compliance and other major projects within the business.
And then if you think about maybe over the last couple of years, in particular with AI coming to the forefront, is there a pattern that you keep seeing across the advice industry when it comes to how practices scale? The last episode that you were on, it was all about balancing growth and innovation. I'm really curious to see, as practice scale, are there any patterns that you keep seeing or that you notice as part of, you know, your travels with Verse and broadening out as well?
It's a really good question. The natural inclination for businesses as they grow, and those that grow quickly, is when things get busy, to hire more people. And I think that's where I see a lot of practices naturally go to, and it's totally understandable. But and Verse was one of those practices as well. We grew from a team of 3 to nearly 30 whilst I was there. And as a result of that, we were able to grow our client base very quickly. But from an operations perspective, it led Verse to putting some band-aid fixes onto things where maybe more strategic operational initiatives should have been needed to be prioritized. Now, that is something that is, again, an understandable position and another thing that most businesses have to deal with. And that's across all different parts of it, whether it's, you know, the client board, client onboarding steps, whether it's data entry, whether it's follow-up emails, reporting, compliance. When it comes to growing, really making sure that you focus less on hiring and more on the strategic operational side of the business will actually enable you to scale faster. Now, to your point earlier around the AI side of things, the AI landscape has changed so much. The interesting part with financial advice is that it's so heavily regulated, and rightly so, when it comes to all the different PII laws, that a lot of the major tools that exist out there, the bleeding edge, cutting edge types of tools, can't really be used with client data. So it's about, at this point in time, what part of those tools can be used now, today, and that's with things like marketing, newsletters, blogs, articles, websites, social media, those sorts of things. that's brilliant for these types of tools at this point in time. But when it comes to more of those personal information heavy workflows, the tools are currently really restricted, and rightly so. Things around like Microsoft Copilot, and I've noticed some practices have mixed experiences with Copilot, but as I mentioned earlier, with the Microsoft Copilot Cowork having the Anthropic Claude models built into it, we are likely to see a much greater output and greater efficiency gains from those tools being implemented.
I'm with you. Oh, there's a lot in there. Do you mind? I think Cowork is very, very new to businesses, and that announcement from Microsoft of sort of bringing the best bits of Claude in that capacity into the Microsoft suite is also very fresh. Is there a way that we can distill and explain how that's maybe different to some of the Claude's other tools, as well as just Copilot in general? Like, how would you, like, I actually struggle to explain what it is, but and so that's the easy job of asking you. But is there an easy way that we could explain that to listeners of what Cowork actually is and why that's significant in the Microsoft scene?
Absolutely. Cowork allows you to edit files locally on your computer. So that is where you might have, you know, in a simple example, a series of invoices in a folder, and you might need to put those series of invoices into a spreadsheet in terms of dates, amounts, invoice line items. And you can tell Cowork to access a specific folder on your computer and have it locked down to just look at that folder. It won't have access to your entire machine. And you can say, hey, look at all the invoices. And what I want you to do is extract all the information out of it and put it all into one spreadsheet. Now, that's one very small specific use case. But from a financial planning practice perspective, you could expand that across lots of different parts of the planning process. Anything that involves data, you can say, hey, here's 10 different spending plans from clients, identify the key trends across the different clients. Here's a client's spending plan versus their bank account statements. Tell me where they don't, or tell me where they match, and tell me where they're overspending. And that's all without you having that manual work yourself. So it's almost like using the interface on your computer, but as opposed to searching online and searching for things in the cloud, it's really focusing much more on the information that's on your computer while still being able to access the web as it needs to.
So, awesome. That's a really great explanation. Thanks for taking us through that. You've just sort of prompted me. One example I know that businesses spend a lot of money on, and no one ever goes, I freaking love my revenue management software, would be, say I use three or four providers. There might be a couple of insurers in there as well. As you mentioned, you can spin up that folder and March as revenue is coming in, and you could give that task to Cowork or the equivalent tool and say, hey, it's revenue reconciliation time, power, match it up against the CRM in terms of the advisor of that client. And if it takes 5, 10, 15 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, it doesn't matter. I can still do my job on the same device and get going. Is that another example? That's probably
spot on. You said that really well. The ability for you to do other work whilst it works is a major game changer. But also, you're right, and I know from experience, the different product provider files, the different formats they give you, some are CSV, some are Excel, some are a Word doc, some are a PDF. And the ability for these AI tools like Cowork to be able to read, no matter the file type, the different information within it, extract the right information out of it. And given within the Microsoft environment, it will be locked down inside your system. The tools itself can read the personal client information, consolidate all of that. And you can, from a reconciliation perspective, go, hang on, why did we not get as much as we thought last month? Or, hey, there was a double payment here. Or, hey, this client missed this payment here. I know for a lot of practices, the revenue reconciliation side of things is a very, very manual process. It's almost line by line. And you're having to spend hours each month or not doing it enough and missing revenue. So there's that interplay there where these types of tools will take a lot of that manualness out of it and also overall increase the accuracy of the job too.
Awesome. I also think like we've gone from, at least I feel like, one shot AI where it's like, do this task and then it will come back and then it's either wrong or it's right, or it's, you know, 60% of the way there, so you get to review it anyway. But it also feels like as we move into this, you know, I think last year was definitely, you know, the agentic era coming to fruition, but it feels like this year in particular, like Cowork would be that human in the loop of, say, like we gave that example of revenue management, where say it's, you know, Panorama or just another tool, and maybe, as you mentioned, with the spreadsheet being different, one of them reports on, gives you net of GST versus gross. And so the ability for Cowork to, I guess, ping you and say, hey, I have these. It's a bit like what Claude does really well now, I'm finding, is it will ask you those clarifying questions up front before it starts doing all that heavy lifting, or it might ask you halfway through so it doesn't go off on that tangent. I think that's really powerful. But also, I'm not sure if it's related to, you know, the concept of skills, but I imagine in that same folder, you could put the instructions of what good looks like or how this spreadsheet is formatted, et cetera. Is that also a big part of, I guess, getting Coworker to do the job in a repeatable and reliable way?
That's spot on. The details of Microsoft Copilot Coworker are light at this point in time. There's just one announcement at this point. But if it's anything like the Claude version, then yes, those skills that you can install are like repeatable processes. And what I find when I'm building my own versions of those is I will do the skill myself the first time, or do the task, go back and forth multiple times. It'll give me an output. I'll go, no, not quite, adjust the output format like this. And then once I get to the very end of it, I'll say, okay, great. We've got to exactly where I wanted to get to. You know where we started. Now I want you to review the entire chat and I want you to build a skill. And to your point earlier, what Claude is brilliant at is asking those clarifying questions and going, hey, this is what I'm not sure about. Here's 5, 6, 7 questions that I want to make sure I get right before I build this skill. And then every single time moving forward, you might have spent 20, 25, 30 minutes building that first process out. But if you then make that into a skill afterwards, you can just say, hey, here's the BT reports, as we mentioned earlier, run the skill, run the reconciliation skill, and it knows exactly what to do. And it can do it, you know, within the 5 minutes. And what I find as well is I will then find it once I run it the second or third or fourth time, is ask it to improve itself, almost have it improve every single time, say, hey, this little workflow, this part of the workflow is different this time, let's improve it again. So it just gets better and better and better every time you ask it to. It really is like another team member that is a genius level IQ that can do any different tasks that you want it to do. It's incredible.
I'm with you. I totally agree. Do you think this spells the end for like Copilot as we know it in terms of like how you're accessing that from, I don't know, Teams, or it seems like it's freaking everywhere. I mean, all AI tools are. But yeah. do you think they will play well together? How do you sort of see that change, or will it stay the same?
It's an interesting question, because Claude still have the very three distinct different
tools,
the Claude Desktop or Claude Chat, Claude Coworker, and then the Claude Code side of things. So I think there will always be a use case for the co-pilots of the world. I just hope that it's with better models, because at the minute, in the past, the co-pilot models that have the co-pilot models that the tools have had access to, the AI models within Copilot, I should say, have been subpar to what's out there at the minute. And so if you're thinking of something like Claude, Claude is brilliant at writing and editing and that sort of thing. ChatGPT, more so from a brainstorming perspective, is really good at that side of it. And if you think of something like Gemini is more great at image generation, but also has a really large context window, which means that you can give it a bucket load of information and it can analyze it really well. So each of these tools have their different strong suits, and being able to kind of select our own models within the Microsoft environment would enable the business to pick the right tool for the right job.
Yeah, I think that's critical, isn't it? Picking the right tool for the right job. And one of the things that has concerned me about, you know, I guess the pre co-work way of life, or the way that I think that's heading, has been this agent sprawl, where particularly in the Microsoft environment, it's all about go and build a power planning agent, a compliance agent, an operations agent, a revenue reconciliation agent. And all you're doing is having to make the team member go through the motions and go, which agent do I use for this job? If they go down the wrong path and actually go into the wrong agent and ask the wrong question, you'll get the wrong result. So it feels like, well, that's the potential is there. So it feels like the evolution of skills and being like Coworker being able to call those agents or processes from that centralized chat should take a lot of that analysis paralysis or decision fatigue, or even just adding to the complexity of the tech stack away. Not sure if you agree with that, but
I 100% agree that the skills, the way that you build a skill is a very specific framework to make sure that it executes the same way every single time. And at the very start of the skill, it has a short paragraph that helps the skill know when to invoke itself or when to actually get started with it. So you're right. You can say, hey, you know, start the power planning request, and the skill library will know exactly which one to call on at that point in time. And get it started, rather than going, oh, there's 50 different skills or agents here? I go, is it the power planning agent? Is it the strategy document agent? Or is it the product replacement table agent? I'm not sure which one I'm calling here. All that will be able to be picked up naturally by the way the skills are built.
Love it. And I guess to finish on that point, so I've really double clicked on this one, Daniel,
sure,
but the
that's okay.
It feels like skills are also a much more approachable way for someone non-technical to get involved with AI, would you say? Like, it really is just writing in natural language a SOP or here's what good looks like. Typically in the sort of developer world, it's, you know, a markdown file, which does not look that easy on the eye if you're not technical, haven't seen it for the first time. But are you seeing that as well? Like, it's becoming far more approachable for non-technical, but also, you know, equally as tech curious people to basically outline what they need, what they want, what it should look like, and iterate on that?
Absolutely. So much so that Anthropic have their own skill creator skill. It's a bit meta. But in and of itself, it helps, it does the clarification question asking of what do you want this skill to do. It will then help you build it. It will then test it versus without the skill and with the skill. It'll then show you the difference between, hey, this is what you would achieve in terms of the output if you didn't have it. This is what you achieve with the skill. And it'll compare the two and have it show it to you and go, hey, what do you think? Do you want any improvements? So when it comes to those sorts of things, it's super easy to build. It's super easy to also use external tools as well, because those skills can call external tools outside of the model. So it might be a SharePoint folder. It might be a advice generation tool. It might be a meeting recording software. It doesn't have to be all within the context window or the chat that you're talking about. But yes, it all is natural language. The future of coding, of building software, of building these types of flows is all natural language. The barrier to entry is so low at this point. And I know from my own experience, having no coding experience and being able to build some pretty cool stuff in the advice space, with that in mind, the sky's the limit. If you have an idea and you can communicate it clearly, the agent itself will take care of the building for you.
I'm with you. All right. Let's go back to the pre-cowork or the pre-agentic era, which actually gives me, like, when I think about the things that we've automated or just gone down, like, it actually gives you great clarity, because you realize just how much AI is impacting, like, impairing your decision making, because now anything's possible. Do you have any specific examples of, you know, stuff that you automated at Verse, or just, you know, personally as well, like some specific examples of automation in the business as you rapidly grew that over that last 8 years?
It's a really good call out, because whilst yes, AI is the new thing, the hot thing, the thing that everyone's talking about, a lot of the times you don't actually need to use AI to reap the rewards of an automation. And one small extra thing I'll touch on before I dive onto the Verse side of things, but one thing to remember with AI is AI is naturally probabilistic versus deterministic. And for those of you that don't know what that means, probabilistic means that if you ask an AI, write this plan for this client, and you do it across 5 different chats, it will give you a different answer on each of them, slightly different. Majority will be the same, but it'll be slightly different. Whereas a deterministic response is something that it will happen the same way every single time. If this happens, then this will happen. And so when it comes to especially client-facing workflows, or moving data between systems, you don't really want an AI to be thinking about what to put in or how to construct something. And so that's from a Verse perspective. I implemented over 75 different workflows and automations across the business. And all of them were automations with deterministic if this, then that. A lot of them flowed around onboarding, specifically when someone would come into the system, how we would qualify them, score them, route them to the correct advisor, then set up a follow-up sequence if they don't actually book in that first chat. A lot of automations around moving data between systems. There's a heap amount of time where teammates, not just advisors, but back of house team as well, were moving data between systems unnecessarily. And those tools saved, or those automations saved significant amount of time across the team. And even things like reporting, just building out systematic reporting that you can generate each and every single week, so you're not clicking the same buttons. Those types of automations, they may be small in isolation, but when you add them up, one across the team, but two across the many weeks of the year, they really do stack up.
They do. I love the deterministic versus probabilistic evolution that we're experiencing. Like, yeah, we've really gone from yes, no to, it feels like the probabilistic, the best way that I've sort of reconciled in my head is it's like AI is doing a multiple choice exam every time and there's no incentive for it to not, you know, pick A, B, C, or D. It's got to pick something. So it's always going to give you something back. And I think that's actually contributing to, obviously it's been incredible for getting stuff done, but that contributes to the whirlwind or just the uncertainty of this new world of we're no longer, the world, I genuinely feel like the world used to run on if statements as you would do in Excel or, you know, flows or recipes or zaps. But it's definitely the combination of those is really, really powerful if you harness it correctly. Do you have any indication of like, you know, time that you saved? Like, was that just a feeling or is there data behind it?
That's a really good question. The Verse didn't track specifically the time saved on those in terms of over the time. I did calculate when I was implementing these fixes into the business, we had a system called Projects and Paper Cuts. Projects were the big systems or big projects we were working on, and we never had more than three of those. And the paper cut system is a small operational inefficiency that if we fix, will improve the lives of teammates or clients. That we blatantly stole it from Amazon, but is a brilliant system. And in identifying which ones to fix, it was clear which ones were going to save the most amount of time. Conservatively, I'd say across, you know, we had a team of nearly 30, it would be 100 plus hours a month we were able to save across the team. So, you know, 1,200 hours at least a year. And what I found was that it wasn't just the time saved that was the winner. Because sure, you can meaningfully measure what that time cost is to a business, but there's two other main things that you can improve on from a business in implementing these automations. One is with the time saved, what can you do with it? And that is oftentimes, you know, spending more time with your clients, giving them better service, increasing your retention, or seeing more clients, having time to sign more of them. And the other one is by building more automations into some of your safe lead follow-ups or your onboarding follow-ups or your when you've sent your proposal follow-ups, you're losing less people out of the funnel. The bucket is less leaky. And so even if you increase that, say, 5, 10, 15% in terms of conversion throughout that onboarding flow, that is a meaningful difference from a dollar value and client sign-up value as well. So, you know, Thomas Reuters in recent times did a study where on average, a professional can save up to 5 hours every single week by implementing efficiencies into the business through AI, automation, these types of tools. So these 5 hours are wasted time that's on admin, things that they shouldn't be doing. And it's one of those things that you don't really realize what's possible in terms of implementing these fixes until you engage someone who does that type of stuff. And has the expertise, not just implementing the fixes, but also the experience of running a practice. So the sky's the limit when it comes to some of these improvements, but it really takes the time to understand where is the time being lost first and prioritizing where the fixes are.
Oh, with you. And I guess it's not all about automation either. Like typically I sort of fall into that camp, but would you say maybe it's not so recent anymore, but I believe you were, or Verse was definitely a pioneer or one of the pioneers of the video SOA concept. And I remember listening recently to the CEO, Corey Wassell, speaking with Rob Pine on the Trusted Advisor podcast about that process. Does implementing the paper cut system, you mentioned the 5 hours, that frees up team members to then focus on these other big chunky projects that then turn into paper cuts themselves once that's rolled out? Is it sort of a flywheel approach overall?
It absolutely can be. Those projects and paper cuts, definitely the paper cuts were team empowered to raise them. You know, when you're day to day doing the task, you go, this definitely could be better, or this could be automated, or we don't need to do this, or this could be done a better way. They would log it, and that would be something that I would review each month to figure out which ones to fix. The video SOA one was a big one where it was really taking away things rather than adding things, and wasn't really automating either. It was taking what was a 60, 70, 80 page document and turning it into a 20 to 25 page document. You know, we halved in some cases, you know, the time for power planning requests, the time to get the ATP signed, the authority to proceed signed by the client. We got that almost every time in the meeting. The advisor enjoyed actually taking the client through the document now rather than this long compliance doc. clients would read the document before the meetings. There was just these wins, wins, wins everywhere. And when we're talking about so that AI automation side of things, that specifically is a great example of we could have automated every single part of that SOA generation from go to woe, that whole 80 pages, and made it so that it took 5 minutes, but it still wouldn't have solved the client really enjoying reading that document. It still wouldn't have solved the advisor going through the document in a way that is easy for the client to understand. It still wouldn't have solved the ATP being signed sometimes six weeks later because the client thinks they have to read every line just in case there's something in there they don't know. So it really is important to step back before you dive into the world of the AI implementations or the automation side of things and really step back and go, well, hey, what does my process actually look like and what makes sense to fix and what makes sense to materially overhaul or change? Because you really, like, if you automate a bad process, it's still a bad process.
Totally. That's a wonderful tip. Do you, just on that topic, like if we think about the automation and as we've talked about, heavy on the deterministic side, is there anything you feel that didn't work or where it went wrong, et cetera? Anything you want to call out there?
I think it's really relevant based on my most previous point that there were times where we implemented automations with things that in hindsight you go, well, that really probably shouldn't have been automated, or we should have spent the time to actually redesign the process itself. One of the things that comes to mind is we spend a lot of time on how to integrate Zoom into our SharePoint environment. We were using Zoom at the time. And after realizing all the different ways that we could do that and investigating quotes for a upgraded Zoom software to move those transcripts into SharePoint, we realized, well, hang on, we've got Microsoft Teams. Why don't we just use Microsoft Teams? We're already paying for it. We're already paying for the transcription side of it. There was some user interface and performance issues why we didn't use Teams initially. That after investigating, we realized, well, actually, we can solve all of those really quickly and just remove Zoom altogether. We in hindsight wasted a lot of time from the Zoom side of things, but that's the game, I guess. You're not always going to hit a home run when it comes to these types of things. You're going to learn over time what is something that's worth fixing or automating or deleting or majorly improving. And it comes back to those, times at bats and figuring that part out. So you're not always going to win, but you do always learn.
I'm with you. It's so silly and can be from a business continuity plan or disruption plan pretty alarming. But sometimes you have to fail at these projects, whether they're large or small, to realize what the true solution is. Like you genuinely, like it becomes a trial and error exercise. So I'm with you. And then now if we think about fast forwarding to today, Dan, like you're talking to practice owners all the time. What are they saying about AI?
So AI, again, is so widespread. And even for myself, I live and breathe this stuff every single day. And even I find it overwhelming, the amount of news that's coming out, the amount of features that are being shipped, the amount of tools that are coming out. You know, at the end of the day, the problem that practices are facing from what I'm seeing is that it's not an awareness problem. They know they should be doing something. They know the tools are out there. They know something can be done. They just don't know how to implement it. They don't have the skills, the expertise in-house. You know, they don't need another software demo. They don't need another meeting to figure out, well, is this the tool? Is this the one that's going to solve all of our problems? You know, they really need someone who understands how an advice practice runs. And that's where, you know, I really saw where my skills and expertise from my time at Verse, now starting Alpine Advisory, to really utilize both my tech and AI side of skills and my experience running the end-to-end of a advice practice, and merging those two together to go, how can I meaningfully impact other businesses and, you know, make the lives of their teams a lot easier, which will enable them to better serve their clients better.
I love it. No, there's nothing better than being in the trenches or having that lived experience. Probably getting out is probably more enjoyable, to be honest. But if I'm running a practice now and I'd like you to, you know, help out with the business, what happens next? How would I engage you, and what's the sort of process that you typically go through?
So the website's alpineadvisory.ai. You can find a bit more about, I guess, the business itself, how we help teams. The first chat is a free 30-minute chat on video call where I dive a bit more into the business, understand a bit more about the problems that are currently being faced and what they're hoping to achieve out of working together. And then I'm really transparent at the end of that, whether it's something that I can help with or not, to make sure that, you know, that I can actually make a meaningful impact on the business. From there, we do a deep dive audit up front, where I go in and spend 2 to 4 weeks with the owners of the business, but also some subject matter experts in the business across a few different conversations to really identify the end-to-end process that a client goes through from when they first reach out to the end of implementation and perhaps a few other processes around reviews and things like that. Once it's really clearly documented what actually is happening in the business, it's really easy to identify the 10, 15, 20 different implementation opportunities that can make a meaningful difference to the business. And based on what I said earlier, it can be really clearly articulated what the ROI of each of those initiatives are. Now, some of them are going to be really high efficiency, really quick wins, for lack of a better word. And others are going to be more longer tail, but still really powerful improvements. And so at the end of that initial audit engagement, we'll design a roadmap together to figure out, well, actually, what does make sense for the next steps? What to implement first? Where is the priority in the business? And then from there, we go through the implementation phase, which can take between 4 to 12 weeks, depending on the different sizes of the business. But the different workflows across SOA generation, reporting, data entry, client onboarding, all those sorts of things are covered. But we want to make sure we prioritize the right things.
I love it. We caught up last week just to catch up in general. And I think the line I used was the commercialization of the paper cut system or strategy. Does that still apply? Is that a part of getting quick wins to get momentum to then move to the bigger stuff, for example?
Spot on. I think the paper cuts, the report itself at the end of the audit is almost like a modified version of paper cuts where you can clearly articulate what these different initiatives are. But throughout that process, you're also very right in that it can easily identify also the major projects that might need to be worked on. That we could say, hey, here's 3, 4, 5 things here that need to be fixed, but they're all linked. Actually, this should be a bigger project and we should really look at the whole end-to-end client onboarding from when a client reaches out to when they sign. That whole process needs a complete rethink here rather than just kind of data entering or fixing the data entry points between the two. So yeah, it's important to be fixing the right things rather than just diving straight into the fix.
I love it. And it's the real, like last episode, it was Mark Zaglis, who focused on the acronym being the COTO, which was the Chief Operations and Technology Officer. It feels like it's a real combination of bringing both your operational and tech lens and your just desire for an amazing or incredible client experience. I feel like that is critical now, like because as you know, like as we've literally just said throughout this podcast, I spent sort of 20 minutes trying to really on co-work, but now that anyone has access to these tools, it really, like the experience of what life was like before becomes even more important.
Absolutely.
More things change, more things stay the same. Can I just ask you, like that's pretty detailed in terms of an audit. So you mentioned sort of 2 to 4 weeks. I imagine depending on the firm or how they're set up, you'd go there in person. If they're already stretched pretty thin and, we're all busy, pushing things out, et cetera, is it going to make things harder before it gets better? How much of that sort of 2 to 4 weeks are you involving with the team? Like a big part of, I believe, in these projects that I've come to do is the acronym is, or another acronym being SABWA, which is Salesforce Admins by walking around. So literally just not stalking someone, but just standing behind them and just monitoring and observing. But is there a bit of that about it? Like actually just trying to get the vibe and seeing what people are doing rather than interrogating them or interviewing them the whole time?
Absolutely. I think there's an element of, seeing what people do on a day-to-day basis rather than just the pure interview side of things. A lot of practices will have documented systems and processes already, which is great, that can speed up the process. But there are some that don't at all and that rely on the people just remembering what to do. So in order to get a real meaningful output, there is going to be some time spent across the team. It's a few conversations across the founders or the subject matter experts within the business. I try and take on as much of the heavy lifting as I can, and only involve teammates where they need to be. So, but it is very, very much a hands off in the upfront audit side of things. And then the build phase, that's something that I help primarily. I do all the building myself. And then the handover is more of a training exercise side of things with the team to make sure they're across all the different changes. So there is going to be some investment by the team in the process, but it will absolutely be worth it in the long term.
I love it. And if you could distill it down to just one thing that a practice owner or COO or just someone heavily involved in the business could do just this week to start figuring all this stuff out, like really big fan of practical actions and things we can take is, yeah, what's one thing they could do to start, you know, figuring all this out?
The one thing that I'd recommend every single practice does is pick one process. It doesn't have to be the entire end-to-end. Just pick one of them. It could be something like copying data between systems or, you know, composing the same follow-up email every single time. And then from there, times it by the amount of teammates that you have, times it by the amount of times it's done each week, and then times that by 52. And that number, I imagine, will shock a lot of businesses, because it's easy to get stuck in the day-to-day where you're just so busy that you think, oh, you know, I'm sure there's things that we could be doing here, but, you know, we've just got too much on. But it's not until you kind of step back and think, well, hang on, if I actually times this number out and actually get the dollar figure, you know, that I posted an article on LinkedIn recently where the average advisor spends $66,000 a year in time cost, or the business cost lost to admin each and every single year. Like, it's a staggering number when you think about it. But again, practices just get to a point where they can't appreciate that because it's too busy, understandably. So go through that process, find the time it takes. And if you figure out what that costs over the year, and that's just one process, that's the other part of it too. That's not the 5, 10, perhaps 15 different flows that could be improved. I think that will really help identify, where are we going to actually focus our time here and what do we need to do about it?
I love it. And then do you also think, as part of like the next step of that, is to potentially avoid, you know, shiny object syndrome? Plenty of tools out there now. Is it investigate? You gave that a great example before about trying to integrate Zoom, et cetera. Is it trying to look at your existing stack and trying to get that to work first before you just buy something else and disrupt the team further potentially?
Definitely. The tools are releasing different and new features each and every single month. As you mentioned Slack earlier, and that's, you know, potentially eating some of Granola's market share at this point with some of the features that it can do. So really taking the time to identify, well, what do I have? What have I signed up for a long time ago? What have I not spoken to the BDM about, or at least searched online? I know BDMs can take up, you know, an hour to kind of take you through something. So even if it is using an AI tool, it can be a ChatGPT or Claude Copilot to go, hey, I signed up to Slack 3 years ago. What are the different tools and improvements that have been launched in the last year that would apply to a financial planning business of X size doing these types of things? And you might be surprised at what your tool stack can currently do.
Awesome. And then say we ignore all of that, like literally maybe just not listening to this episode might help with that. But if say that gets all ignored and nothing happens for, say, the next 2 years, what's that going to cost a business? Like what is the opportunity cost of doing nothing?
I mentioned earlier that report that 5 hours a week per professional, I think that's only going to grow up, not down over time. And I think clients are naturally going to expect more of businesses over time and focus more on, you know, that tech-enabled client experience, that and have the advisor more focus on the things that only they can do, the human advisor side of it. The practices that are mapping those types of operations today are going to be the ones that are ready for those next wave of tools. We spoke about earlier about data and the underlying data foundation. If you don't get your data right, it doesn't matter how good your AI tool is. It's really one of those garbage in, garbage out scenarios. So in 2 years' time, if you've done nothing, your data's still scattered, it's all over the place, it's not all in one centralized repository, you'll find that a brilliant tool will come out that can perhaps run a large part of your business, but without that foundational layer, the output you get won't be very good. So you can't automate what you haven't mapped. So my strong advice is to take the time now, figure out what you're doing, figure out where the pain points are, get your data sorted, and to set yourself up for that growth into the future.
Awesome. Dan, thank you so much for your time, mate. I really appreciate catching up with you again and your insights and expertise. How can people find out more about you, or just get in touch or progress that conversation that we've had today?
Thanks, Patrick. Thoroughly enjoyed today's chat. In terms of next steps for people, I'm on LinkedIn, Daniel Donovan. You can find the website alpineadvisory.ai. A bit more about the business. You can find a busy work calculator on the website as well. So if any business wants to understand a bit more about what the actual time cost of their lack of automation in the business, it gives you a really clear indication there. And then you can book a call on the website through Calendly. Pick a time that best suits you. Free 30-minute chat, see how I can help, and we can take it from there.
That is really cool. I've just jumped on your website and going to it now. That is very clean. Dan, thank you once again. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Patrick. Thank you.